start with the Bhakti section of the 18th chapter. So we discussed about how a person starts with Karma Yoga, understanding that the modes control everyone. Therefore, according to one's own ashram, one starts worshipping the Supreme Lord. And by that, gradually one becomes qualified enough to become detached from the world, to practice Jnana Yoga, and then to attain the Brahman platform. That's what we discussed, starting from 40 to 53. So now Krishna will describe how above that Brahman platform, or starting from the Brahman platform, is the platform of Parabhakti. So here onwards, actually, in this chapter till now, Bhakti has not yet been directly talked about. It's more analysis of material nature in terms of the three modes and of people's actions, especially not just material nature, people's actions within material nature in the three modes. So the only hint of Bhakti till now was in Swakarmana Tam Abhyarcha, with your work, worship Him. But now here onwards, Bhakti will become singular focus, and not just singular focus, Bhakti will be revealed to be superior to everything else, and everything else will be subordinated and harmonized with Bhakti. So Brahmabhuta Prasannatma, Brahmabhuta Prasannatma, na shochati na kaṁshati, na shochati na kaṁshati, samaha sarveshu bhuteshu,
samaha sarveshu bhuteshu,
mad bhaktim labhate param,
mad bhaktim labhate param.
So Brahma Bhuta, when a person comes to the so Bhuta actually means existence. So Brahma Bhuta means to be situated on the Brahman platform. So Srila Prabhupada talks in a lecture about how Mamaivamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. So he says the living entity can be in the actually in the material existence or the spiritual existence. So this is the Jiva Bhuta. That verse is a reference to the material existence, and he contrasts that with Brahma Bhuta, that is spiritual existence. So Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. So one becomes cheerful. Why does one become cheerful? That is described in the next verses. Because one is free from hankering and lamentation. Na shochati na kaṁshati. Actually, as long as we are hankering for something, we feel dissatisfied, and if we don't get it, we lament. So once you become free from hankering and lamentation, then the natural joyfulness of the Atma starts becoming manifest, because the Atma is Satchidananda. And it is described in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that when Devahuti served Kardamuni properly, the result, the blessing that she got from that sincere service was that Kardamuni blessed her, you will become free from hankering and lamentation. And actually, if one becomes free from that, one can become very steady in whatever we are doing. In fact, Srila Prabhupada writes and speaks also that our material existence means our entire material existence goes in these two things only, hankering and lamenting. I hanker for what I don't have, I lament for what I have lost. So have I discussed about this acronym FIT, futility, insubstantiality, temporality? I discussed that long ago. Three possibilities in material enjoyment. So when I hanker for something, I don't get it only, then it is futility. I hanker for something, I get it, but it isn't satisfying. So then there is insubstantiality. I hanker for something, I get it, but it gets over soon. And there is temporality. So either way, in all three options, material enjoyment, the hankering will lead to lamentation. All three. Whatever I do, ultimately hankering will lead to lamentation. Therefore, na shochati, na kaṁshati. Person, when he's free from that, the person becomes joyful. And then not only is this with respect to events and things, it's also with respect to people. Samaha sarveshu bhuteshu. In the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna talks about this equal vision, he describes this in two levels. First he talks about samaloshtrashma kanchana, equal poised towards things. And then surun mitra ryudasina madhyastha dvesha bandushu. He talks about it 6.8 and 9. The next, this was Surun Mitra Yudasin, is how a person is equipoised towards people. So to be equipoised towards things is easier than to be equipoised towards people. This person in this, Prabhupada, okay, Krishna integrates both in the verse, and he says equipoised towards everything material. And then at that stage, which from the point of view of impersonalist would be the perfect stage. There's nothing more to achieve at that point. Because once one has achieved some equanimity, one has realized one is Brahman, everything is Brahman, one is merged in Brahman, exists, everything is over. But Krishna is saying at that time, labhate. Labhate means to attain. At that time one attains bhakti. What kind of bhakti? Para bhakti. So the word para essentially means superior, higher, transcendental. So we have para and apara practices also. So labhate param, which a person will attain the supreme bhakti. So this verse is devastating for impersonalism. It's devastating because the whole strategy of impersonalists, of the Advaitins, is to subordinate bhakti to jnana. But this verse completely demolishes the subordination by actually saying that jnana is subordinate to bhakti. That jnana is the platform from which bhakti actually begins, parabhakti begins. So now what does Krishna mean over here? That as long as we are materially contaminated, our bhakti is not para. That's what, even if we are sadhaka, we are practicing bhakti right now. But if we are not yet samash naroshta, nishochitna kangshati, samasarveshi bhutishi, we are not in this platform, then our bhakti will not right now be para bhakti. It is shuddha bhakti. It is not shuddha bhakti, it is a mishrita bhakti. But that is okay, because we are in the same process. By following this process, we will move from mishrita bhakti to shuddha bhakti over a period of time. So after describing this, then somebody wonder, okay, actually Brahman is the ultimate attainment. Then you attain bhakti, after what happens by attaining bhakti? That Krishna describes in the next verse. So there is a series moving forward. Practice karma yoga, come to jnana, by jnana come to Brahman, by Brahman attain, up from the Brahman level attain bhakti, and then after bhakti what happens? Then one comes to know Krishna. That is described in the next verse. Bhaktya mam abhijanati,
bhaktya mam abhijanati,
yavanyaschasmi tattvataha,
yavanyaschasmi tattvataha,
tato mam tattvato gyatva,
tato mam tattvato gyatva,
vishate tadanantaram,
vishate tadanantaram.
So bhaktya mam abhijanati, by bhakti one can know me. And then after that, How does one know me? As I am. Tattvataha. So now, where Prabhupada correlates this with 4.9 is Janma karma chane divyam evam yo vetti tattvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mameti so Arjuna. So the correlation is in two ways, the janati and tattvataha. So here it is abhijanati, janma karma cha metirnam, evam yo vetti tattvata. There the word is vetti and janati similar. And the emphasis is tattvataha, in truth. So there what Krishna has said is, he is just given the result of the knowledge. Here the process of getting that knowledge is given. There it is told, if you know me in truth, then you will come back to me, you will become liberated from material existence. Here it is said, how can one know him in truth? By bhakti. Bhaktyam abhijanati. And cha asmi tattvataha, as I am, so you will know me. So this part is very categorical, because the previous has said Brahman platform is attained. After the Brahman platform is attained, bhakti is attained. And after bhakti is attained, one knows Krishna as he is. So again, this section not only shows that bhakti is above the Brahman platform, but even Bhagavan is above the Brahman platform. Because the Mayavadis also have the idea that the Brahman is the all-pervading ultimate reality and Bhagavan is a temporary manifestation of that. But this verse says no. With bhakti one can know him as it is. So actually the whole analysis of jnana or deconstruction of Bhagavan as is done by jnana, it subordinates bhakti, and they say that by bhakti you cannot know the absolute truth. You have to actually go beyond bhakti to jnana, then you will be able to know. You remember I discussed about how, you know, I used to write articles for Speaking Tree. So one time this, the editor of the Speaking Tree, she's an elderly lady, she wrote to me, write an article about why Krishna is black. And don't tell the usual story stuff. So then I did a little bit of research. Why such a curious question? Why Krishna is black? And then I found there is a Advaitin Swami who has given an explanation why Krishna is black. So he says, just think, why would anybody ascribe a dark black color to God? God is pure. God is effulgent. So why would anyone ascribe a dark color to God? There is a reason for that. Because the idea is, form is a sign of ignorance. Form is a sign of darkness. So by ascribing a dark color to the form, the message is that we have to go beyond the dark form to the white formlessness. So, you know, when presented in such a way, it's, no, really, I didn't know that. So clever. It appears like that. So this sort of interpretation may appear very attractive to the speculative mind, but it has no basis in scripture. And this sort of mentality is typical of Mayavadi. It's very offensive to Krishna. It's one thing to say that somebody is attracted to Brahman, but it's another to say that the darkness of Krishna's form is a sign of, is representative of it being a reminder of ignorance. Actually, Krishna's form is dark, and that indicates how everything about Krishna is inconceivable. So normally the dark complexion may not be considered very attractive. But in Krishna's case, he is not just Shyam, he is Shyam Sundar. So how the dark complexion can be attractive? That is not possible in the material realm, that is only in the transcendental realm. So that's how I wrote the article about analysis about how the darkness is indicative of the transcendence of the form. Not that it is indicative of something you have to go beyond to go to transcendence. But Yavan Yas Chas in the Quran, Krishna is telling that. What is the reference for that? The darkness represents Achintya? Generally, I think I read in the lecture of Prabhupada, Shyam Sundar. Prabhupada doesn't say exactly that. The darkness represents Achintya. So Prabhupada just says that Krishna is Shyam Sundar. And he says normally Shyam is not considered beautiful. But how Shyam can be beautiful? That is Krishna's transcendental beauty. So the exact correlation with Achintya is what I did. It would be my philosophical speculation. But the point is that it is true. Prabhupada just mentioned that Shyam and Sundar is there in it. Now, in general, Krishna never makes the Mayavadis hopelessly frustrated. If somebody wants to hold on to Mayavad, Krishna will allow them some scope. Because ultimately, Eko Bahunam Yogdhati Kaman. The Lord has to maintain everyone, and that maintenance is not just physical, it's also intellectual. If somebody wants to believe in atheism, Krishna will allow people to believe in atheism. And Krishna will say that, okay, people, there is so much amazing arrangement by which rains come. And if somebody observes the objectivity, it cannot have happened by chance. There has to be intelligent designer for it. But the atheist will say, if rains were provided by God for us, then what is the need for rains in the oceans? There's already so much water, there's no need for water over there. So therefore, the idea that there are rains in the ocean proves that actual rains are not designed. And everything has happened just by arbitrary chance. So why are there rains in the ocean? Just to give atheists a scope for asking this question. That's all. So, see, the simple argument over here is that if there is a big house, and in that house there are 50 rooms, 25 rooms are very clean and tidy, and 25 rooms are very untidy and messy. So naturally we may ask the question, okay, why is it like this? And we may say, okay, maybe this house is owned by two people. One person is clean or one person is unclean. Or whatever. Now, you could say that, okay, the 25 rooms, there is no owner for that house, there is no caretaker for the house, that's why it's unclean. So, from disorder, we can infer that there is no order maker. That is fine. But even what to speak of 25 rooms? Even if even one room in a house is orderly, that will raise the question how the order has come from. So it's not, even if I see disorderliness in the world, that doesn't necessarily prove that there is no design. If I see orderliness even in one part of the world, I will have to be confronted with the question, where does the order come from? In fact, that question will become even more important if there are 49 rooms which are completely unclean and there's one room which is spick and span in a mansion. I wonder, how is it spick and span? And that even one orderly room will require a order maker. Similarly, even if one part of the universe were well designed, that would recall for a designer. Not to speak of huge, almost entire aspects of the universe being designed, and some aspects apparently being designed in such a way that we can't understand the design. It seems designless for us. So the point here is that even partial design, even if an object is a part of it is designed, that requires an explanation, because no kind of design can come by chance, especially the complex and intricate design that characterizes nature, that can't come by chance. So the parallel over here is that just as Krishna allows the atheists to have some hope about atheism, that's what they want to do, similarly he allows that for the impersonalists also. And what he does over here is tato maam tatvato gyatva viśate tadanantaram. So viśate, enter into. Yes, you have to enter into the Brahman. So that viśate gives them some hope. But actually speaking, if you look at the overall context, Krishna has very clearly, I, maam abhijanati, not some other truth beyond me. And again the asmi tatvata. And tato maam, when tatvato gyatva, when you have known me in truth, so tatvata comes twice, then what will happen? Vishyate tad anantaram. You enter into that infinity. Tad anantaram is anantaram, can refer in time sense, thereafter you will enter into, or it can, into that infinity one will enter. Whichever way one wants to use it. Take the translation. So now here the question remains, what is that tad anantaram? So Krishna is here in the material world and is saying that if you know me, you will go there in the spiritual world. So it is not necessarily, viśate doesn't necessarily have to refer to merging. Viśate simply means entering. So entering can be merging. Entering can be entering and still maintaining one's existence separately. That simply refers to when you know me, you'll go back to that spiritual world. So Krishna is here and he says that spiritual world will go back to. So that tad doesn't, so here the word viśate and tad can be misinterpreted to say that it's referring to there is some Brahman in which one will enter. But Krishna has already said that you attain the Brahman platform, then you attain bhakti, then you know me. Then what is the point of saying again one will attain to the Brahman? If that tat were referring to Brahman, then there is no logical flow in these verses. Is this point clear? That tat cannot refer to the Brahman. If I say that, okay, now you have attained graduation. After attaining graduation, you can enter into your doctorate course. After you attend a doctorate course, you will meet the best scientist of the country. And after you know that scientist, then you will get your doctorate degree. Then you will get your master's degree. Then you will graduation degree. No, there has to be something higher. Graduation, you already got that. Isn't it? So after graduation, there are two things. I am entering into postgraduate doctorate course. Then I am meeting a very famous scientist. And after that, again I get the graduate degree. Doesn't make sense. There has to be something higher over it. And the lower was clearly talked about as Brahman. So now for the Mayavadi, there is nothing higher than Brahman. Because only Brahman is there. What is that? Brahma Satya Jagan Vidya. Sarvam Kalmam Idam Brahma. Ekam Brahma Dityanasti. So their idea is that only Brahman exists. So if there is something higher than Brahman, then after that there has to be something higher that is created. So that this Tadanantaram refers to the spiritual worlds, not just the spiritual sky. The spiritual sky refers to the Brahma Jyoti. Within the spiritual sky, there are specific spiritual worlds, spiritual planets, more specifically, where the Lord performs eternal pastimes with devotees. So this tad in the hierarchy cannot refer to the Brahma. It refers to the spiritual planets where a person goes when a person knows Krishna. And that also becomes clear if you look at 4.9, because Krishna says over there, Tektva deham punarjanma naiti maam eti. So they come to me. He doesn't say that they go and merge in some Brahman. He says they come to me. So this tad refers to the spiritual world in which Krishna is present. So they attain that spiritual world. Any questions about this? So now, after describing this, Krishna will move forward and he will now begin a new section. So what is that new section that he begins? Yeah. So here you will see Sarva Karmani is there in this verse, and in the previous verse also there is Sarva Karmani. So Krishna is emphasizing here now. So how it has happened? From the 40th verse, he's talking about how everybody is in three modes, bound, and then people can have to come out of bondage at Varnashram. By Varnashram, you offer the worship Krishna, come to Jnana, Brahman platform, then attain bhakti, then go to the spiritual world. So this is one slow hierarchy that Krishna has described. Now Krishna is going to describe an alternative hierarchy. The alternative hierarchy is, okay, whatever Varnashram you might be, Sarva Karmani Api Sada. You remember the word karma came again and again while describing all the four Varnas. Kshatra Karma Sabhavajam, Brahma Karma Sabhavajam. Now while describing in 42, 43, 44, when Krishna described one of the four Varnas. So now Krishna is telling, okay, whatever your Varna, whatever your karma, just perform bhakti. So that's what, now the singular focus on bhakti and its capacity to elevate a person from whatever level that person may presently be, that is talked about. So this, from the 56 onwards, there is a sort of change of sections. So from 40 to 55 talks about what? Starting with karma yoga through jnana and attaining bhakti. But 56 talks about practicing bhakti from wherever one is and attaining perfection. So that goes on to the almost the 66. We'll discuss this. Sarva karmani api sada, sarva karmani api sada, kurvano madhya pashraya,
kurvano madhya pashraya,
mat prasada davapnoti,
mat prasada davapnoti,
shashvatam padam avyayam,
shashvatam padam avyayam.
So, sarva karmani api sada, whatever karma might not be performing, kurvano, okay, you can do that, but madhya pashraya, take shelter of me. Now, where is a word similar to Vyapashraya coming? In the Bhagavad Gita famous words. Striyo Vaishyasta Shudras. What is that? Mahabhi Partha Vyapashritya. So, Ashraya, Ashraya to take shelter. Vyapashraya, Vyapa means Vyapta. Complete shelter. So, one is totally sheltered. So, Kurvano, whatever work one is doing, but not Vyapashraya. Take shelter of me. And then Krishna says, if you take shelter of me, you don't have to go to the elaborate process of practicing various sadhanas of jnana. Mat prasada. By my mercy, avapnoti shashvatam padamavayam. You will attain that supreme destination. So, till now, the concept of prasad was not talked about in the 18th chapter. In fact, the concept of mercy has not really been referred to in the Bhagavad Gita so much. But here Krishna uses the word mat prasadat, by my mercy. And he will use mat prasadat again in two verses later also. So the emphasis in bhakti is not on our endeavor, it is on Krishna's grace. Our endeavors are just to show Krishna that we want his grace. Our endeavors don't actually lead to a spiritual advancement. It's Krishna's grace that leads to spiritual advancement. You remember that example of a person who is drowning in a, who is fallen in a well, and then somebody might just try to climb up by one's own effort. Maybe just hold on to the wall and something, try to climb it up. Or if a rope is thrown down, then somebody may say, okay, you're thrown down the rope, okay, you'll be peaceful. Now I climb up on the rope. I'll climb up on the rope and come out myself. But the other is that actually you just throw down the rope and actually I just hold on to the rope and the person outside pulls me out. So the just trying without any rope, just trying to, by holding onto the wall and trying to come out, is like trying to become liberated from material existence without any support from scripture, without any scripturally given process. Many people may try that. Oh, this world is a misery, I have to get out of it. But that often leads to frustration. So, when Krishna throws down the rope, that is basically scripture. But it is not that all the scripturally outlined methods talk about mercy. For example, karma and jnana, and even yoga to some extent, they are more sort of endeavor-centric, because there one is not even clear the absolute truth to the person, and the person loves me and the person can give the mercy to me. So that's like one is following scripture to some extent, but one is centering one's spiritual advancement on one's own efforts. But when it's bhakti, like Krishna sends down the rope, he gives the scriptural process to us, but we don't try to climb up the rope. Our effort is only to hold on to the rope. Just hold on, and then Krishna pulls us out. So for holding on also, we need to put in an endeavor. And actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he doesn't just send down a rope. He sends a rope with a bucket in it. You just have to sit in it.
So he makes it extremely easy.
But often we are sitting inside the bucket and we are so eager to see what is it that we have left, and we turn the bucket around and fall back. So, Kuruvano Madhyapashrayaha. Because I say, just take shelter of me, and by my mercy, you will Shashvatam Padamogam. Come out of the well and become free. So now, after describing this, Krishna will elaborate this.
चेतसा सर्वकर्माणि मयि सन्न्यस्य मत्परः बुद्धियोगमुपाश्रित्य मच्चित्ता सततं भव.
So the emphasis on bhakti is becoming more and more clear. Chetasa sarvakarmani mayi sannyasya. With your consciousness, offer all the fruits of your work to me. That means, generally some people may say that only when I become purified can I serve Krishna. Krishna says, no, whatever work you are doing, offer the fruits of your work to me. That means even if a person is the lower varanas, that person can also offer the fruits of the work to Krishna. Matparaha, make me your goal. And buddhi yoga mupashritya. So where is the word buddhi yoga came first time in the second chapter? And then that buddhi yoga was explained in the 10.10 as the intelligence that Krishna gives by which you can come to me. You'll come to me by them. Practice the Buddhi Yoga. Now after describing this Buddhi Yoga, Krishna refers back again to it in the end, and he says, how should you take shelter of me? How should you offer your work to me? Buddhi Yoga Upashitya. So actually, taking shelter of devotional activities, what will happen? Machitta satatam bhava. In this way, you will always be conscious of me. Be conscious of me. So actually, machitta is very directly reminiscent of Prabhupada's rendition of the English as Krishna consciousness. The word Krishna consciousness, what is the Sanskrit equivalent of that? From the Bhagavad Gita's perspective, it is machittaha, machittaha. Of course, there is also the phrase of Rupa Goswami, Krishna rasa bhavita matihi. So that is also like a reference point for the English phrase of Krishna consciousness. So Sridhar Maharaj, when he was asked, the phrase Krishna consciousness is not used by Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur, this particular compound word. So when Prabhupada came back to India, and Prabhupada not only used the word Krishna consciousness, that he enshrined that within the name of the movement itself. So it was a little, the Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur's mission was Gaudiya Math. So some of Prabhupada's godbrothers were a little skeptical. What is this newfangled sounding term, new Krishna consciousness? Where has this come from? So then, Sridhar Maharaj said, this is a very good rendition of Krishna Rasa Bhavitamati. Krishna Rasa Bhavitamati is what is that verse? It says that we cannot get bhakti just by punya. Krishna Rasa Bhavitamati kriyatam idi kutona labhyate tatra laulyam ekalam janma koti sukrutaina labhyate. So what is the Rupa Goswami saying? Krishna rasa bhavitamati. the attraction, mati consciousness, for the consciousness to become Krishnamayi. If you can get that attraction to our consciousness to Krishna, kriyatam yadi kutopi labhyate. Wherever one gets it, for whatever price one gets it, one should purchase it. So why? He says that what is the way to get it? What is the price that we have to pay for purchasing it? He says that is atara lauliyam api mauliyam ekalam. The only price is greed. One has to be greedy to be Krishna conscious. Lauliyam api mauliyam ekalam. Right? Then he says janma koti sukrutayena labhyate. This laulya cannot come just by punya. Even if one performs punya, for many, many lifetimes, one will not get this laulya. That laulya actually comes by the mercy of Krishna, by the association of devotees, where that mercy manifests. When the devotees are attracted to Krishna, through their attraction to Krishna, we become attracted to Krishna. Bhakti sanjayate bhakti, just like a wood has the potential to be lit. But for the wood to be lit, it has to come in contact with some other law of wood, which is also lit. Similarly, our heart has the potential for bhakti, but the potential for bhakti will be awakened when it comes in contact with some other heart in which the potential of bhakti has been awakened. That's how bhakti sanjayate bhakti. So much chittaha, Krishna consciousness. Very striking phrase it is. So Krishna is telling here, by buddhi yoga, by offering the fruits of your work to me, you become conscious of me. And now Krishna will again start using the strategy of instructing by contrasting. So he has told somebody, has said, Krishna has said, whatever be your level, you just practice bhakti, you surrender to me. So now, if somebody says no, Krishna says, what you want me to do is fight, I can't fight. In case Arjuna has that attitude, Krishna will first give a general principle and in the next verse, and then he will give the specific application for Arjuna in the next two verses. So all this is to exhort Arjuna to practice bhakti. Machitta sarva durgani,
machitta sarva durgani,
matprasadatarishyasi,
atachetvamahankara,
mashroshyasi vinamshyasi. So machitta, if you become conscious of me, Krishna says, whatever obstacles that might come, sarva durgani, all obstacles. Durga is basically like a fort. So fort is obstructs a person when a person is trying to escape. So the word fort actually, with respect to material existence, refers to prison. Sometimes prisoners can be kept inside a fort. Sarva durgani, all obstacles will be removed. Again Krishna uses the word mat prasada, by my mercy they will be removed. And Krishna is saying, the word he uses tarishyasi. Tarishyasi actually means not even the crossing, it's just floating over. Tarishyasi, terna. This is obstacles, you must be lifted over the obstacles. This word Taishasi reminds us of 12.6 and 7, Tesha Maham Samudharta. So I will take you out of material existence. Krishna extends his hand, so they wrote a condition so in the material by bhakti. He offers the hand and is pulled out. So Mat Prasada Tarishasi, by my mercy will cross over. And on the other hand, Athachet, if you think that you know better, you don't want to surrender to me. Tamahankara, if you have the ahankar, nashoshasi, you think you know better, you don't have to hear me, then vinangshasi, you'll be lost. So vinangshasi is not actually vinashyati. Vinashyati is to be destroyed. Vinangshasi is to be lost. You'll be lost in the sense that you continue on cycle of birth and death. You'll be lost as far as finding the way out of this is concerned. Just like if a person is trapped in a maze. The maze can be something like, say, there are many paths, there are underground cellars with many paths, different paths going in different directions. And all of them, one doesn't know how to come out. So if one knows somebody who knows the way out, one just takes that person's guidance and can come out of that maze. But all of you know the maze, concept of a maze? Maze is basically like some traditional palaces and other places, there will be an underground channel of network of passages. And so there are so many passages which go in so many different directions. They're all underground caves and cellars and tunnels. And underneath it, one doesn't know how to come out. If I go this way, I might be going deeper inside the tunnel only. I go another way, it might be taking me in some other direction. So if it's all dark and there's so many passages, one doesn't know how to come out. And all these passages interact with each other, and they just, which is leading in, which is leading out, which is leading where, it's very difficult to know. So if one is trapped in a maze like that, it's very difficult to come out. So the way to come out is if somebody knows, okay, this is the way out. Just follow that person. So Krishna is saying similarly, actually you are trapped in material existence, the modes are pulling us in different directions, and how can one come out? Shri Krishna says, I know the way out. You just follow me, you become conscious of me, you abide by my instructions, you will come out. But if you decide that you don't want to follow me, then you will be lost. So that Vinangshasi will be elaborated in the next two verses. How you will be lost? Krishna, I am not lost. I am intelligent. I am talented. I am a Kshatriya. I know what to do. So Krishna explained how they will be lost means we will be forced to act by the modes. And the modes will act us in a way, force us to act in a way that will continue our bondage. So that Vinangshasi will be elaborated. Krishna used the same word Ahankar to make sure that we get the continuity. If one takes a shelter of ahankar, so it's very graphic use of the word, because generally speaking we think of shelter in terms of something higher, something divine. But Krishna says, if you don't take shelter of me, you will have to take shelter of ahankar. So yadahankaram ashritya, take shelter of ahankar, and because of your own independent mindedness, then nayotsyaiti manyase, if you think I will not fight, so what will happen? Mithyaisha vyavasayaste. So, this is summary, we'll just look at this. I'll complete this for that. Mithyaisha vyavasayaste. Vyavasaya. Where was the word vyavasaya coming? Vyavasaya atmikabandhi. Very good. 2.41. So, vyavasaya means determination. So, your determination will be mithyaish, which means directed. It will be directed towards mithya. And prakritistvam niyokshati. So, you say you will not be engaged by me, then you will be engaged by material nature. It said that one who does not accept God as almighty, for that person his tongue and genitals become almighty. And they drag that person around. Ultimately we have to accept something as almighty. So the mind becomes almighty, the senses become almighty. And he just drag the person around. So, this is prakriti stham yokshati. How prakriti will make the person act, that will describe in the next verse now. So, svabhava jena kaunteya.
Svabhava jena kaunteya.
Nibaddha svena karmana kartum nechasi anmohat,
kartum nechasi anmohat,
karishyasya vashopitat. So svabhava jena, by the svabhava which you have got, all of us are nibaddha, and we are bound towards what? Svena karmana, towards our own activities. So the Bhagavad Gita very clearly recognizes that all of us have particular natures, and those natures impel us towards certain activities. So Krishna says, svabhava by svena karmana. So Arjuna, you are a kshatriya. Because of your kshatriya svabhava, you will be impelled towards kshatriya activities of fight. So now Chakravarti Pal explains that Krishna is telling Arjuna that you are saying that you will not fight, you will become a mendicant. But when you are a mendicant, and you are begging alms in the role of a mendicant, if somebody refuses your alms, what will you do? You will take out your sword. I want to punish that person for being insolent enough to refuse. So he says, this is not the way a kshatriya should behave. Chakravarti Pal, that is the spices. Krishna says, when you raise your arms at that time against innocent people, then I will laugh at your stupidity. So now you are saying you will not fight, but nibaddha svena karmana, you will be forced to fight. You cannot avoid that fighting. So, Krishna, as if to emphasize this, Krishna is using so many words here. See, first is nibaddha, bound. And then he uses nechasi and avasho. So three times he is conveying the idea of bondage. You're bound nibaddha, neichasi. You not desire it, but you'll do it. And then avasya, helplessly. It's not something that we can. Our nature is extremely strong, whatever the nature may be. And to artificially deny or reject that is not possible for a very long time. So nibaddha, just as you're bound, acknowledge that. And I have given a program by which whatever is your nature, you can use it to rise to a higher consciousness. So follow my program. So let's look at what is happening in the last chapter of the last section of this chapter. So Krishna will talk about Guhya, Guhyatara and Guhyatama a few verses later. I'm just preparing for that now. So first Krishna talked about Nishkam Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga to Brahman and then from Brahman to Bhagavan. Then after that he is talking about direct practice of Bhakti Yoga where you can come to Bhagavan. So this I will come back to this a little later. Let's complete this section first. So here Krishna is, Baldev Devaji says Krishna is talking about something called Swabhavavad. Swabhavavad means the vad is theory or philosophy. This philosophy says that all of us are bound by our Swabhava. So if we are bound by our Swabhava, modern times the idea is of genetics. So that we are just controlled by our genes or we are controlled by our hormones. We are controlled by the biochemistry of our body. So this idea is quite deep rooted today. And it can lead to a lot of harmful consequences. That means if somebody is a criminal, a murderer, and then that person is proven by the court to be a murderer, then what happens is the lawyer just gets a certificate from the psychiatrist that this person is mentally unstable. And because this person is there is the certain chemicals in the brain, there are certain genes or something like that, because of which that person is impelled to act like that. And because that person is impelled to act like that, so therefore is not responsible. Now it's possible that some people can be actually mentally unstable. But the whole concept of law and justice impinges, depends foundationally on the concept of responsibility and free will. Unless I had the free will to choose to do right or wrong, and then I did wrong, there is no point in saying that I should be punished. You know, if a say Pakistan sends a missile to India and the missile falls in Mumbai and it is about to explode and destroy the city, but somehow people come before that and catch it and detonate it, and after that we are not going to put the missile, do a court case against the missile and then put a jail sentence on the missile. What we will do is just destroy it. Why? Because that missile is insentient. That missile, it is just going to do whatever function it is programmed to do. And either it will do it or it will not do it. That's all. So why is it that in human beings, when human beings do something wrong, it is not that immediately the first thing is, oh, you did something wrong, just finish you off, kill you off. That is not done. Why? Because it is understood that human beings can change. The whole purpose, whole principle of reformation that is there, that is based on the premise that human behavior is changeable. Otherwise, there will be no meaning for having jails. The only thing we need to do is, if there are criminals, kill them. Because the logic would be, why are they criminals? Because their brain programming is bad. And what can you do about the brain programming? No, it is unchangeable. Therefore, kill them. That would be the only solution. But that has never been done, and that should never be done. So, this idea that all of us are programmed, either from the modern perspective by our genes or by our hormones, or the traditional understanding that we are programmed, the idea that we are programmed by our Swabhava, both miss out the fact that all of us have free will. So there is a difference between, you remember, impelling and compelling. Mm-hmm. I explained the mind impels but it can't compel. So impel means to push, whereas compel means to force. So the mind can push us, our Swabhava will push us to act in particular ways. But when it pushes, we can counter push. We don't have to necessarily subordinate ourselves to the push entirely. And the whole process of Varnashram is not so much even as to counter push, but to channelize the push. That means, by my Kshatriya nature, I'll be pushed towards being a controller, being a warrior, being a fighter, being a protector. So what should I do? This is my nature. I cannot entirely counter push it. So for example, say there is a simple example. There's a rock over here. And a huge flow of water is going to come. So that when that flow of water is going to come, that rock is going to be pushed out of its position. It's going to carry on the flow. So what one can do is, one cannot stop the flow of the water from coming. One cannot stop the rock from moving. But if one creates a proper channel, by which that rock, instead of going in one direction, can go in another direction. So then what happens is, the movement will be there, but that movement will be in a particular direction. Similarly, the Kshatriyas, those who are of Kshatriya mentality, will act in particular ways. That cannot be avoided, but that can be channelized. And the whole purpose of scriptures is to channelize our actions according to our nature. And after describing this, so the flow was 58 was saying, it gave an ultimatum. Either you become conscious, don't become conscious. What will happen then? Then he says, how will the Vinanshati be there? Because your modes will force you to act in particular ways. Then Krishna will describe, if somebody says, if Krishna is using so emphatically over Nibbadha, Nechusi, Karish, Avasho, that if am I just completely controlled by my modes? Is there nothing that I can do about it? No. Krishna describes that, okay, yes, you are controlled by the modes. You cannot fight their control. But there is someone who is above the modes, above material nature. And if you surrender to his control, then you can become free from this control. That will be described in the next two verses. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam
Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam
Riddeshe Arjuna Tishthati
Riddeshe Arjuna Tishthati
Brahmayam Sarva Bhutani
Brahmayam Sarva Bhutani
Yantra Rudhani Mayaya
Yantra Rudhani Mayaya.
So this verse has many significant points. First is that it is also a very clear reference about how Krishna is situated in the heart. The Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, is situated in the heart. Which is the other verse which says that he is in the heart? Yes, Sarvasachaham Vindhi Sanyavishto. So many, many Hindu organizations have the idea that they say the soul and God are situated in the forehead. And so that's why you all put tilak on the forehead. So actually, there is no scriptural basis for that. We put tilak on the forehead because it is a prominent, visible part of the world. So we want to remind ourselves that actually I am a servant of Krishna. And then of course on the chakra point of view, the Agnya chakra, the highest chakra is over here. So that is also marked over here. In Shat chakra. Or it's not that the super soul is present in the head. It's very clearly mentioned that it's in the heart. That's the first point. Riddeshe Arjuna Tishtati. And the important point is, again, Sarva Bhutanam. The super soul is present in the heart of everyone. Let's say, that Sarvasya Chaham Vidhisanni Vishto or Sarva Bhutanam over here. It indicates that Krishna's love is not discriminatory. Krishna's love is all encompassing, is all embracing. Even the people who forget him, even the people who reject him, Krishna is present even in their hearts. And nothing can cause Krishna to leave somebody's heart and go away. He will forever live in that heart. And he will wait for that person to turn towards him. So, Riddeshi Arjuna Tishthati. Should be the region of the heart. And then what is he doing from over there? Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani. So there are two words. Sarva Bhutanam and Sarva Bhutani. So first, Sarva Bhutanam is referring to those all living beings as Krishna is present in their heart. Krishna is present in the heart of all beings. Second, Sarva Bhutani refers to that all living beings are also wandering. So when they are wandering, how are they wandering? Sarva Bhutani Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. They are situated in a machine made of Maya. So Yantra is machine and Maya is, here the word Maya is referred to illusory energy. It refers to matter. And it refers to the material energy which controls that matter. So we are made on the machine, situated on a machine of Maya. And on that we are wandering. So in a sense, to some extent, our bodies are like machines on autopilot. You know, when an airplane is on autopilot, even with the pilot's direct intervention, the pilot plane keeps moving. So like that, people who don't use their free will, who just act according to their impulses, they are an autopilot. And especially animal life is largely like existence on autopilot. Animal sees something to eat, immediately pounce and eat it. Animal sees a mate, if it's a mating season, animal will immediately go in there. If it is not the mating season, it's not that the animals are so self-controlled. It's just that at that time the autopilot for mating is not on it. So it's just they just programmed like that. Krishna is saying sarva bhutani yantra rudhani maya. They are wandering on this machine made of matter. And what is the actually speaking? There are some verses which we quote very often, but often if we look at the content of those verses, they seem to be saying two very disjointed things. Remember I discussed about 15.15 also. First part says Sarasyam is an institute in the heart of heaven. Second part says that actually I give knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So what is the connection between the two? I say from within the heart, observing your desires, I reciprocate by giving knowledge, remembrance, forgetfulness. So similarly here, what is the correlation? I am situated in the heart of everyone and all living beings are wandering in a machine made of mine. The correlation is that actually I am the companion. I am the companion of all living beings. So I am not just the companion. It is, Krishna uses the word Ishwaraha. So that Ishwaraha contrasts with the previous verses Avashaha, Nechasi, Nibaddha. So the soul is bound in the body, but this Ishwara is not bound. This Ishwara is free. And Krishna is going to tell that, next verse will tell the point there. So the machine is something which is controlling us. The soul is here, material nature is right now controlling the soul. But soul is, but above this is the super soul. So if we surrender to the super soul, then we can become free from the control of material nature. That is the next verse.
Tameva sharanam gacha.
Tameva sharanam gacha.
Sarva bhavena bharata.
Sarva bhavena bharata.
Tatprasadat param shantim.
Tatprasadat param shantim.
Sthanam prapsisi shashvatam.
Sthanam prapsisi shashvatam.
So, Shashvata, so if you surrender to that Supreme Lord, by His mercy, you will become free from this material existence and you will attain that eternal destination. So, why Krishna refers to Himself in the second person over here? We will discuss that in the evening class. Thank you very much. Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki jaya. Shri Rupa ki jaya. Kaumudapapalimit jaya. Dairo Primani.